From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thank you very much for joining us today. Our show this morning is all about the census. We will be hearing later on from an official from the city of La Crosse. And joining us now is Bob Giblin, who's a census media specialist based here in the state of Wisconsin. Bob, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thanks for having me. And let me just start by thanking everybody in Wisconsin who's completed the census so far. We're now getting into the final push for the 2020 census, but there's still an opportunity for everybody to respond and be counted.
That's, I guess that's what we call not burying the lead, Bob. So speaking of that census and urging everybody to get counted, let's start with what might be an obvious question to some. Why is the census so important?
Well, the census is really important for several reasons, but two of which that affect your community is basically money and power for your community. The first thing that the census affects is how House of Representatives members are dispersed among the states. There are 435 members of the House of Representatives in Congress, and those are allocated to the states based on census numbers. The second real big impact is in federal spending. Each year, about $675 billion is allocated back to communities, states, counties, in other areas through programs that are based on census numbers. And so it affects things like health and medical programs, nutrition assistance, school lunches, energy assistance, and housing. One of the real big things is funding for highway and road planning and construction. So regardless of how you use the roads, whether it's foot, bicycle, motorcycle, car, truck, or horse and buggy, federal money allocated based on the census affects you.
And this nationwide count occurs every 10 years. Is there a reason that 10 years is significant? I mean, obviously, the name census comes from the fact that it is every 10 years, but is there a significance to that number aside from that?
Basically, the 2020 census is a count of everyone who lives in the United States and its territories. Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution calls for a complete head count every 10 years of everyone residing in the United States. The first U.S. Census was conducted in 1790. We count everyone, regardless of citizenship, race, creed, color, ethnic group, religion, origin, or age. And our goal, as is always, is to get a complete and accurate count.
Wisconsin is, you're based in Wisconsin, and so obviously, you know, you're keeping an eye on things here. Is there a way to know how our completion rate is coming along or faring compared to other states?
Actually, there is. If you do a search, you know, using Google or one of the other search engines for census response rates, you can get to a page that shows the self-response rate for the state, for the whole United States, but it also shows by state, county, city, township, congressional district, and tribal area, and even census tracts within those areas. Right now, nationally, the self-response rate, basically those who have already responded by internet, phone, or mail, is 63.9%. Minnesota is currently leading the nation among the states with 73% self-response rates, and Wisconsin is second with 70.3%.
So that self-response rate is one thing, and then there, in addition to that, there are efforts on the ground with census takers going through neighborhoods and walking up to people's doors in the more traditional way. How's that going?
So far, that's going well. And in Wisconsin, we have about 2,700 people on the ground today going door to door to assist households in responding to the 2020 census. You may have seen some of them in the neighborhood already. And also some households may receive phone calls. But we're still encouraging people as much as they can to self-respond. This is the first time that everyone can complete the census either by internet, telephone if you've got a cell phone, or by mail if you received a census response form either in the mail or if one was hung on your door handle earlier this summer.
The big thing that's thrown a monkey wrench into the entire year of 2020 and is just messing up everybody's plans is COVID-19. How has that affected the ability of census workers to do their jobs?
Well, it's affected it in a lot of ways. But one of the things we've found is that it because of COVID-19, self-response using the internet has been very, very strong. But what it's done is it's altered the schedule of some of the activities that go on with the census. For example, a lot of people don't understand that census forms or invitations to complete the census are actually sent to households and not individuals. So if most of the households started receiving invitations in March and probably received several others later. But for those who don't get mail at their home, if they picked up their mail at post office boxes or if you're in certain rural areas that don't have mail delivery, you receive the census form during a process called update leave, where a census worker will go to the household, verify the address. It's a non-contact process, and then drop a census form at the door. That was supposed to start March 15th, and it in fact did, except because of COVID, it ended March 18th. We have a lot of households in Wisconsin that are in that situation, and so that process resumed in June, and it was completed pretty quickly. The other thing has changed is that our on-the-ground efforts are what we call non-response follow-up. It's where we send people door-to-door for the people who have not yet responded by internet, phone, or mail. That was delayed, and so that's actually underway. It started with kind of a test run in some areas in mid-July and a test run in part of Wisconsin at the end of July, but it is underway full force in Wisconsin started August 9th.
And so their deadline for self-reporting is coming up here next month, right? How long do people have if they haven't completed that census information already?
They're going to have to complete everything by September 30th. And, our self-response and all of our counting will end by then. And so, that's coming right up. And so we're really encouraging people, self-respond if you can. And if you can't self-respond and need somebody to help you when they go door to door, please answer the door and complete work with the census taker to complete the census form.
And when somebody knocks on your door, I mean, people are pretty wary about that these days. Those people are keeping appropriate distance, and they're not like getting all up in your personal space and everything like that. They're taking proper precautions.
Yeah, there are a couple of things that are really important, and one of which is the safety both of the citizens, everybody who's participating in the census. Also our census workers, and also protecting your data. Our census takers are wearing masks, and they will follow the public health guidelines in the area when they do visit. They're required to maintain a social distance of 6 feet or more, and they won't enter homes. They'll try to conduct the interviews outside as much as possible or practical. The other thing is, it's really important to know that census takers take an oath to keep individual response data strictly confidential. The Census Bureau doesn't share your information with any other federal agencies, law enforcement, ICE, or any other agencies. So we're really trying to protect three things: you, the census takers, and the information that you're providing.
So we're getting near a break here, but before we go, let's remind people one time as we step away how they can go online and fill out the information themselves.
Sure. You can respond online at www.2020census, that's CENSUS.gov, or by phone at 844-330-2020, or by mail. Also, I would like to remind people, you can respond online at 2020census.gov in English and 12 other languages. Or you can receive assistance through language guides and videos available in 59 languages.
I'm glad you mentioned the languages, because that's what we're going to talk about after this break. We'll talk about reaching out to what's known as historically undercounted and other populations throughout the state of Wisconsin. So we'll talk about that next. Our guest today is Bob Giblin, who is a census media specialist based here in the state of Wisconsin. Bob, we'll be right back on Newsmakers. Stay with us. If you'd like to find out more about our program, you can visit our website. It's WPR.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Bureau. Thank you very much for listening to our census show today. Our guest is Bob Giblin, who's a census media specialist based in Wisconsin. Bob, welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining us. And before we left, you were talking about how many languages that census information is available in. What was the number?
English and 12 other languages. And then we also offer assistance online with videos and instructions in 59 other languages. But to take the census, we have English and 12 other languages.
And that brings me to something that I think is very important, which is reaching out to sort of non-white or non-English speaking populations and other people who might have historically been undercounted or otherwise marginalized. Talk about some of those efforts that census workers and really the whole census operation goes through to make sure that all of those people are counted.
There are lots of different kinds of living situations that can make people hard to count or cause groups of people to be undercounted in the past. They may be college students, immigrants, farm workers, certain faith-based groups, the homeless, senior citizens, veterans, even millennials. In the past, the Hmong population in Wisconsin was undercounted, and our partnership specialists have been working very closely with the Hmong community to try to get a good participation this year. In Wisconsin, another really big group is snowbirds, those people who primarily live here but who may spend time out of state. So no matter where they live, it's important for them to be counted, either where they live most of the time or where they were April 1st. One other area that's really important is getting an accurate count of all children. And in the past, one of the things we found is that the census undercounted and people underreported young children. And your participation and including them in your census response is really important, because that's going to drive decisions that impact their well-being for the next 10 years. You should make sure that every child is counted, and even if they were born on April 1st, they should be counted.
I'm interested to hear more about counting the homeless, because that, regrettably, that's a category of people that are too often out of sight, out of mind, and making sure to count them for something as important as the census seems like it would be very important.
It is very important. And the Census Bureau, census takers work with communities to identify the areas where there are homeless, and then there are processes to work on completing them. The census takers will be counting people under bridges, in parks, and all-night businesses. That'll take place September 23rd and 24th. They also will be working with people who need assistance, and maybe they're we work with service providers at places like soup kitchens, shelters, regularly scheduled food vans, and that's also taking place September 22nd through 24th. Another thing we're doing is, and this isn't just for the homeless, this is for other people. There are a lot of people who may have problems, responding online because they don't have internet access, or, maybe they haven't received or misplaced their form. In different places, we have something called mobile questionnaire assistance, and that's where Census Bureau staff visit places that people just happen to go. It may be grocery stores, farm stores, certain events, farmers markets. and they'll set up a stand and they will provide assistance to people to complete their census. And that's going on right now, and will continue for the next several weeks.
So there is assistance available if somebody feels like they're not up to the task of completing this themselves. Maybe they have some difficulty reading or something like that. Somebody can help them with that.
There is assistance, and of course they can always call and get assistance over the telephone if they need it. And so, there are lots of different ways to get assistance. And also a lot of communities are providing assistance. You have to kind of, check with your local government or local libraries to see what's going on. But one of the things we've done is work very closely with what are called complete count committees. And these are committees of people set up usually by, through local government, whether it's at the township, the city or the village or even the county, and they engage a lot of different people on the committee. They usually bring in people from faith-based groups, business groups, and others to be kind of the ambassadors for the census in their community. And in a lot of communities, they're providing assistance as well.
So you talked about the homeless and others who might be difficult to count geographically. Are there areas of our state that are sort of historically more difficult to get a good count, or where the count is a little bit under where you'd like to see it this year?
Yeah, geographically, and this isn't unique to this year. This is something that's happened in the past. It's particularly a challenge in northern Wisconsin. If you look at all the counties, along the Wisconsin, Michigan Upper Peninsula border, and up in the far northwest, we've got a big rural population. A lot of people don't have internet access. Also, a lot of those are second homes or seasonal homes, or have a lot of snowbirds. And it's really important that people understand, if you have a second or seasonal home, even if you've completed the census for your regular home where you spend most of your time, you also have to do a census form for the seasonal home. And what you do with the seasonal home is say that there are no residents in it year-round. But it's really important that we get a complete count there. And then we also have a couple of other areas of the state. Adams County, for example, where again, you've got a lot of people with second or seasonal homes, so the counts are low. And then a couple of other parts of the state also, again, with seasonal homes. When we look at Walworth County in the Lake Geneva area, or Door County, where you have a lot of people who live somewhere else full time, whether it's in Wisconsin or out of state, but have condominiums or recreational properties there. Those areas are a little bit slower than the rest of the state right now.
What about outreach to native populations? I know that there have been issues, related to the census, but related to other things, there have been issues with much historical validity, establishing trust and building relationships. And so how does that process work? What outreach efforts are necessary to make that happen?
Well, the Census Bureau has been working very closely with the tribes in Wisconsin. We actually have a census partnership specialist who's a Native American, and her role is to work with the tribes to promote the census, and they've been very engaged with recruiting census takers and also promoting census participation within the tribes.
You know, every time there's some big effort like this that's highly publicized that's going on, somebody is going to try to take advantage of it and scam people. What do people need to look out for, or are there frauds and scams that people need to be aware of as far as the census is concerned?
It's important for people to watch out for requests for certain personal information that the Census Bureau does not ask about. For example, the Census Bureau does not ask for Social Security numbers, banking or credit card information. We do not ask for donations or anything about political parties or affiliations, and we don't ask about citizenship.
Later on in the show, we're hearing from someone from the city of La Crosse who's been active in this area, but I know other areas have to deal with the notion of counting college students whose minds are on other things at that age, not to mention there could be confusion about where it is they're supposed to be counted in terms of whether they're still part of their parents' household or whether they should register separately as an individual in the census. What are some of the sticking points when it comes to measuring college students?
There are a lot of ways that students are counted, and it depends a lot on their living situation. And this was something that really was impacted by COVID-19, because just as COVID started happening, the universities had to close down, and a lot of students had to return home. But basically, students in dormitories or who live in on-campus housing or housing owned by the university are counted in ways similar to those that the Census Bureau counts those living in other group facilities. Those include college dorms, military barracks, nursing homes, group homes, shelters, correctional facilities. And for those who normally would have been living in those situations as of April 1st, the Census Bureau has been working with representatives from, say, the colleges and universities to make sure that we're getting a count of the people from the dorms or from on-campus housing. Where it's a little bit more confusing to some is for those students who don't live in a dorm and have off-campus housing. And so if they lived off-campus, even if they went to their home for school breaks, they should count themselves at their off-campus address in the city where they go to school. We also have some students are a little bit different if they live at home with their parents or others and then commute to school daily, they should count themselves at the home where they live. But what was a little bit tough was students who moved off campus or from their off campus back home, but they still should be counted at the place where, and they should count themselves and do a form for their off campus residents in the area where they go to school. Now, some people might worry that their parents may have counted them and now they're going to count themselves. And the Census Bureau has processes in place to clean the data if somebody reports themselves twice. And that's something that we can work out. The bigger danger is for somebody not to be counted. And so when in doubt, count.
So a college student, let's say they, born and raised in, Green Bay or something like that, and they go to school at Viterbo University in La Crosse, in spite of the fact that they're legal residents for either tax purposes or on their driver's license or on their insurance or whatever might be in Green Bay at mom and dad's house, for census purposes, they should count themselves in La Crosse.
Yes, they should count themselves in La Crosse. And one of the reasons for that is because, as we mentioned, a lot of the spending goes to services to support local communities. So it's really important to know how many people are actually living in those communities.
So you said that the response rate is Minnesota's leading the way so far, but Wisconsin's right up there and doing pretty well with the response rate. So the message is getting out. Where does the message need to get out still?
The message needs to get out all over for those people who have not yet responded, either self-responding or waiting for a census taker to come to their door. And, we have overall within the state, we have a pretty good response rate, but there are pockets of areas that are a little bit lower. I'll give you an example. The self-response rate for La Crosse County is 71.6%. But for the city of La Crosse, it's still 66.1%. And within the city, there are tracts with lower rates, between 45 and 47%. Those are probably areas with a lot of student housing. So it's important to reach out to those areas to where people have not yet either self-responded or to where a census taker may go, and encourage everybody to respond. Your response in the census makes a difference for you, your community, the county, and the state for the next 10 years. This is a chance to stand up and be counted and have a big influence.
In terms of that, I mean, you could say this is almost as consequential as voting itself.
It's very, very consequential, and it is also affects your voting. Again, the census is used to determine how the number of House rep, House of Representatives members are allocated to the states. So your participation influences how many congressmen we have in the state of Wisconsin. The other thing it affects is redistricting. We talked about at the federal level about congressional apportionment and about federal spending. But later on, the census data goes to the states, and that's used to determine how the voting districts are set up within the state.
We've got a couple of minutes left, and I want to use that time once again. I know we've said it before, but just to remind people of the different ways that they, if they haven't been counted yet, can participate in the census this year.
Basically, there are four ways. What we're really encouraging is that people self-respond by internet, phone, and mail. You can still respond online at www.2020census.gov, by phone at 844-330-2020, or by mail. And so if you respond online, you can do that in English or 12 other languages and receive assistance through language guides and videos in 59 other languages. You can also respond if you see a mobile questionnaire assistance point where you're visiting, whether it's at the grocery store, or farm market. They may be able to help you. But also, if a census taker knocks at your door, please answer and complete the questionnaire. Again, this is your chance to make a difference for your community, city, town, county, and state for the next 10 years.
Bob Giblin has been our guest today. He is a census media specialist with the state in the state of Wisconsin. Bob, thank you much for sharing all this valuable information.
Thank you very much for having me. And again, we want to thank everybody who's completed the census so far. And we hope that everybody else will complete it sometime between now and the end of September.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios. Our website is where you can find this episode if you've missed part of it. You can stream all of our episodes on demand there. It's wpr.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to take us on the go, find your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. Our show continues in a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Bureau in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking about the census today on Newsmakers. And joining us now is Tim Acklin, who's the senior planner for the city of La Crosse. He also helps to coordinate the activities of the 2020 Census Complete Count Committee in La Crosse. Tim, thank you very much for spending some time with us today.
Great. Thanks for having me.
In terms of the census and getting everybody counted, I know the ultimate goal is to have a record for the census of every single person who lives in La Crosse. But overall, how would you express what your goals are this census time around?
Well, I do think the goal for our committee is to have everybody counted. I think my own personal goal would be at least to exceed what we did in 2010. I believe we were in the 80% response rate, I believe, in 2010 for the city. Low 80% perhaps for the city of La Crosse. But my goal, the overall goal of our committee, is to make sure everybody is counted.
So what does it take to move the bar from that 80% that was achieved in 2010 and get closer to, higher in the 80s or in the 90s?
Well, in general, the goal would just be education about census, why it's important, to fill out your census and provide the information, education on, particularly for the student population, that of where you're supposed to fill the census out, here versus maybe, if they're here just for college but really live with mom and dad in Green Bay, they should be filling it out here, not having their parents do it in Green Bay and counting them, things like that. So there's really education factor on things like that that would help ensure that we can get everybody counted.
We can talk later about some of the other difficult areas, but since you brought up college students, let me ask you about that, because logically, you can see how somebody might reach the conclusion that their parents could fill it out, because a lot of these students are still on their parents' health insurance. They're still claimed by their parents on tax documents and those kinds of things. Their official residence is often still, their driver's license and whatnot in the home that they've occupied with their parents. Why, for those listening, would the census be different than that?
Well, it's really supposed to be a snapshot in time, right, of where, what is the count of everybody at that time. And like National Census Day was like April 1st. It's really supposed to be where are you living as of April 1st. And for the most part, students are still in school April 1st, and they're supposed to fill it out where you live at that time. So that's just the way the census criteria has worked. So
what have been
again, like I said, it's supposed to be a snapshot in time.
Yeah. What have been the challenges as you engage in your outreach efforts as far as either convincing people to fill out the census documents or letting them know where they are? I know it's a lot more online activity now than in years past, or just in even reaching people to let them know about the census.
Well, I think in general, we've not had a problem for the most part in educating people on its importance. I think the issues that we've been facing have been in general with students, where to get them to fill it out, to have them fill it out at all. Usually when you have one person fill it out, then you need to get, like, so if there's a family of four, you know, spouses and children, one person can essentially fill it out for the whole household and all the information. If you have a student rental that's off campus and you have like five roommates, one person can take the lead to fill out a portion of it, but then each individual person also has to fill out their own information. So there's a little bit more to it when you have that sort of dynamic of a household. It's also then the education of that they're supposed to fill it out here rather than have their parents do it back home. And then, of course, then you also get when you have, you know, things can get lost in the mail, whether it's people just think it's junk mail and they throw it away. We try to do a national or, you know, at least a citywide campaign that says this is coming. Please keep an eye out, fill it out, things like that. Now, with the go around this time, COVID played a huge part in making it worse for us, really, in terms of education and getting the word out. Because about the same time the census was coming out for people to go online and fill it out was about the same time when all the students were sent home. They decided to go back home, so they weren't living in the same household or, you know, and that's really what happened. And so while we're still hoping to capture the students still living here, a majority of them, we found out, were sent home. And that even played a larger role in us not being able to get the word out to fill out their census. And if you look on the census website, on the response rates, particularly for the city of La Crosse, the areas that have a large student off-campus student population are some of the lowest percent response percents in the city. And so we really attribute it to that. We have been working very hard with the universities to still get information to the students through email and other sources to tell them to still fill it out. But I mean, you can only do so much and you don't know how much they're looking at it. At that point too, other things are on people's minds. Whether they're going to lose their job or their business or feed their children or whatever it is. And we kind of feel like filling out your census was not high on people's priority at that time. So that was been some of the struggles recently.
In terms of the efforts within the city of La Crosse, what's being done to reach out to historically, what the census might call historically undercounted populations?
Yes, we try very hard to get, make up our committee of a lot of the populations that we felt were hard to get to. So we do have representatives from each of the universities, TC, Viterbo, and UWL on our committee, with the idea that we can go through them to help reach the student populations. We do have somebody from the Hmong Cultural Center on our committee as well to help us reach that population. We have reached out to other included them at least to be part of our meetings and other representatives from other communities, you know, ethnic populations or such, to get them to be a part of our committee and be involved. And we also have members of the media on our committee to utilize them to get the word out about the census. We do have representative from the homeless coalition as well. So we're working with them to help us get the homeless population counted. So we try very hard through the makeup of our committee to be able to reach out to those populations, those underserved populations.
Why is it important for a city like this to be accurately counted and for the powers that be to know with precision who is here.
Right. So La Crosse has been hovering over 50,000 population for the last few decades. And it just seems in general 50,000 is the magic number. Making sure that we have an accurate count of our population can help us with, you know, the number of elected officials we're allowed to have in our area. It can help ensure what type of, how much funding can be provided to us through our block grant program. It can help us determine the amount of grants or funding that we can apply for new schools and roads and things like that. And really, the more people that we can show we serve and the population that we have is going to make other organizations and nonprofits competitive when applying for, or not just competitive, but eligible for specific grant sources and grants to apply for their organizations. So the more people we have counted just helps us be stronger as a community and make better choices and be competitive for other sources of information and other resources.
So people that might be familiar with census from either the 2010 census or 2000 or before that are familiar with, you know, the people going door to door and knocking and taking down your information in person. And that's just, it's happening to a certain degree, but that's not the primary way that people are sending in information for this census. So if somebody has not filled in their census information, that nobody has knocked on their door, they don't recall getting a piece of mail. Like you said, it could have been, you know, tossed out as junk or something like that. What should they do now?
You can still go online and fill it out. So you can go to 2020census.gov and you can go online and respond that way. It's very easy to do. They tried very hard this go around to make it all online and very easy to fill it out and answer the questions you need. So it's very easy to do. Once you go to 2020 Census, the immediate page that pops up is how to respond, how, you know, respond here. So it's very easy to do. And then the self-reporting period ends, I believe, September 30th. So that's when that ends. And that's the last time that you'll be able to go online and self-respond. But I do know that as of August 9th, people have been going out now and knocking on doors. And I just had, I saw somebody actually walking in my neighborhood the other day and knocking on doors. And they had a mask on and they were keeping their distance and they were doing what they could to social distance as well. And so people are out and knocking on doors. I think if they knock on your door, please take 10 minutes or so to answer their questions and be as helpful as possible. Every person we count helps.
Tim Acklin is the senior planner for the city of La Crosse and is also active on the 2020 Census Complete Count Committee for the city. Tim, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. If you'd like to hear this interview again or a previous episode on demand, you can visit our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. You can always subscribe to our podcast if you'd like to take it on the go. Just go to your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. Our show continues after this. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwestern Bureau in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. We've been talking about the census, several people telling us about why they think everyone should return that census information. We've talked about deadlines on how to get that done. You've got about a month left if you want to self-report. And you can do that online or via mail or via phone. And joining us now to talk about another aspect of collecting census data in La Crosse is Emily Yang. Emily is a student at UWL. She is studying racial issues there. She is part of an organization called Diashia, which is active in the Hmong community in the La Crosse area, providing services and connecting people with resources that they need. And she's here not speaking as a spokesperson for that organization, but certainly being involved in that work has gotten her involved in this census effort. And she's here to share some of her reflections with us. And Emily Yang, I thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ezra.
Absolutely. So tell me about how you got involved. I'm assuming that the last time the census was around, it was probably a non-issue for you, having been so young. But how did you get involved this time around and decide that the census was something important to you and important to your community?
Yeah, so I think last time the census was around, I was like 12. but I got involved in this because, well, it's my major. My major at UWL is public administration. And so when I got started at my position at Gishia Inc., that's when, it really came in full force. So yeah, this is really just making sure that our community is as powerful and as heard as possible.
How do you, just your reflection, you know, I know you may not have actual data in front of you on it, but how do you feel like things are going as far as outreach to La Crosse's Hmong community and the response rate?
Yeah, so it has been a journey. I'll definitely be honest here. It hasn't been as fruitful, I guess, as I would have hoped. Not because of anyone's fault in particular, but because there are just so many barriers that the Hmong community faces when it comes to completing the census, right? So, yeah, it has been a challenge to make sure that all the Hmong families in the La Crosse area are completing their census and getting counted.
So you talked about barriers. I know we've heard from city leaders and others who have talked about how many documents are available in how many languages and what tutorials are available, videos online, and so on. But the barriers that you're talking about are not necessarily just those things. There's some issues of trust between people and the larger community. Talk about what hurdles you have to overcome when you're trying to convince someone to give such personal information to an agency of the government.
You know, you're right. The language barrier has been the first one that the Census Bureau has been working really hard to get rid of, right? And to really engage the Hmong community. However, there is that distrust that you were talking about. And I think, so many members of the Hmong community have a distrust in the government and in the Census Bureau and the census process as a whole because of the lack of outreach and education. The La Crosse area has seen Hmong folks for about 45 years now. But even after all this time, this is like nearly how many? Four different census counts. Even after all this time, the Hmong community is still being undercounted. And it's important that we ask, like, why is that? We can talk about the language barrier as much as we want, but then in general, the Hmong community does not really know what is happening with these statistics and where is this information going. We only have one more month. It's August, one more month until the census count is over, but we're still here, like, simply trying to push for more counts. I think the language is a difficult thing because although the website is translated in 59 languages, the census itself is only translated into 13 languages, and Hmong is not one of them. So to further make that worse is the digital gap. Some folks don't have internet, right? And so they can't do it on the computer, and that gets rid of the website that is in Hmong sometimes. Yeah, if you choose the option for it to be in Hmong, then you get rid of that if there's a digital gap. And then when they can't understand what is being asked by the Census Bureau, then they can't do that by phone or mail either, right? So, there's that as the barrier. And it's not just that. The distrust in the government, it also goes to the census itself. Being in my minor for ethnic and racial studies, the census has reinforced social structure of white supremacy for nearly 100 years. So not a single census count to wash away all that history and that trauma within people of color communities, right? I guess the next right thing that can be done is for individual beings, like especially white folks, to practice and elect those who practice anti-racism.
So if I could ask, I mean, I'm glad you brought up what one aspect of what people can do, because I think a lot of people listening to this might be wondering, you know, other than just treat people kindly when I run into them in public, like mm-hmm. what can somebody who is not necessarily used to being active outside of their immediate sphere of influence, what can those people do to create a society that is more welcoming to people who, like you said, have been here for 45 years and ought to be able to feel like this is their community too by now after this long, and yet so many of them don't? What can, like, we as a fellow, like, white person, what can we do to make people in our community feel welcome and as though it's their community as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, just practice anti-racism. It's not enough to be nice, right? It's not enough to be a kind person, but to really practice anti-racism in your own life and elect those who do that as well. This way, communities of colors can be seen and be heard.
You've mentioned the term anti-racism a couple of times, and we've been hearing that in the media over the last couple of months, and I think it may be some people's first opportunity to learn about that concept. So what does that term mean for you? Are there specific things that people can do that would move them toward that category of not just being non-racist, but instead being anti-racist?
Actually, being a college student and learning about this, it's an ongoing journey to learn what that really means. But based off of my experience and my knowledge and professional skills of this, anti-racism is constant reflection on your internalized beliefs and just really questioning society as a whole, being a critical thinker and knowing how the world works and how this country works, right? So like I was saying earlier, it's not enough to be a kind person. It's not enough to be nice, but you really have to address the issue on hand and live differently.
So our time is drawing to a close. And so I want to circle back to this idea of the census and why it's important, not only for our community, La Crosse, as a whole, but for your specific part of that community, which is the Hmong community in La Crosse and in the La Crosse area. Just for people listening who might be wondering about the census and if they should participate and why they should participate, what would you tell them in, you know, 30 seconds or so about why they should participate in the census?
You know, I think that people should participate in the census because, one, you are legally obligated to, but more importantly, it is your civic duty to do so. These plans, or more so these statistics, are going to be created by the data that the census provides, and it's going to be used for funding for the next 10 years. So if we can create the most accurate yearly estimates, then we should. These plans are going to come into full effect for schools, education, social welfare programs, Medicare and Medicaid, infrastructure. And if it takes you only 10 minutes out of 10 years for one person in each household to complete the census and really create the most accurate estimates, then why not, right? Why not? That's 10 minutes out of 10 years.
And on that note, I thank you very much, Emily Yang, for joining us. Emily is a college student who studies these issues at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, also works actively in the community through the organization Yoshia Inc., and although she's not acting as a spokesperson for that organization today, she is sharing her personal reflections, and I'm grateful that you've done that. Thank you very much, Emily.
Well, thank you, Ezra.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse Bureau. I want to thank you very much for joining us today. If you'd like to hear today's program again, or if you'd like to stream on demand any of our past programs, you can find them on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. If you want to take our show on the go, just open your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. I would appreciate it very much. We'll be back again next week with another Newsmakers, and I hope you'll listen to that. So for my producers, Dawn Jewell and John Davis, I'm Ezra Wall. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.